today is, oh my gosh, May 27th? No.
May 20th.
May 20th, 2006. I'm in Coachella Valley at the DACE Center, 53990 Enterprise Way in Coachella Valley. I'm interviewing George.
What?
Just when I say that. Your name, sir? Your complete name?
Right. My name is George Walter Williams.
Tell me a little bit about yourself and growing up in this area.
I did not grow up here. I am an import.
Okay, tell
I
me
came
about.
Into the Coachella Valley in 1973. I came in by way of an education out of Carson City, Nevada, by way of California, California schools, California law schools, the Peace Corps, and here.
What brought you to this area in 73?
In 73, I came to be the director for an office for legal services program that at the time was called Community Legal Services of Riverside County. And I was the chief attorney, chief bottle washer, only attorney for the office in Indio.
Okay, and what was, how did you get involved with agriculture in this area and the center that you've opened up? And tell me a little bit about the background on that.
In 1971, when I graduated from law school and passed the bar, I went to work for a group, another legal services agency in Vallejo, California, Solano County Legal Aid. They placed me in a farm working community in Vacaville, California, and I dealt with farm workers out of Dixon. At the time, I spoke very, very little Spanish, but there is a certain sense of belonging when I began attending farm worker events. There was a political aspect to it because at that time, Cesar Chavez and his organizing committee was just getting started. And it was an exciting time to be in a social practice of law. You knew things were changing. Vietnam had been coming up and down. California Rural Legal Assistance had been formed about 3 years or so prior. And there were attorneys that were 3, 4, 5 years out of law school that were arguing seminal cases before the California Supreme Court and winning. They were arguing cases before the United States Supreme Court and winning. They were representing farm worker interest, taking on some of the strongest entrenched agricultural interest, corporate interest, that one could imagine. It was an exciting time to be 23 years old. I started there, realized that there was a language difficulty, and my partner and I then joined the Peace Corps. Part of that was a natural sense of wishing to travel and to live in different cultures and to meet different people, and also a certain sense of what Kennedy had to say in terms of asking not what your country can do for you, etc. We served for a little less than 2 years in Venezuela. I was very, very anxious to get back to California. With my newfound ability to communicate in Spanish. And when we returned, the first job opportunity that I saw in the middle of the summer was an advertisement for a managing attorney to work in Indio, California. Indio, California is one of the hottest spots that you can imagine in the United States. We're very hot down here. I recall a comment to my partner who in hell, I think that was the approach, would like to go to work down there. 4 days later, I was driving an unair-conditioned automobile, color black interior, a red car, in August, in the midst of the heat, down here, dressed as I assumed one would do to interview, which was a suit, a white shirt, and a tie. Miserable is an understatement. I was interviewed with folks in t-shirts, beards, jeans, just exactly the same sort of folks that I had left previously from Solano County. They liked me, I liked them, and I was hired on the spot, and I was there for a year.
And then what happened?
Within that year, India was a booming metropolis. Well, metropolis, big word, but it was a booming town of about 30,000. Couldn't find a place to live here. Instead, lived in Palm Desert, which at that time was a sleepy little town with a third-rate high school that tried to pass itself off as a junior college next door. We were here in India 1 year, and I left to go back up to Northern California. I went to work for the Diocese of Sacramento for the church. It was a project that they called the Department of Mexican American Affairs, and I was their attorney for a program that they referred to, a federally funded program, I might add, that they referred to as Mexicare. Terrible name, great experience. My partner went to law school in those 3 years, and when she passed the bar, I had the opportunity to mount up a great white horse and to come back down to Riverside County and to establish a farm worker program to provide services to migrant farm workers. There was a competition involved between three separate legal services groups, one out of Ventura County, one that was now the newly combined Riverside and San Bernardino counties, and they referred to themselves as Inland County Legal Services, and California Rural Legal Assistance, CRLA. CRLA, of course, was both and is, depending upon your viewpoint, the 800-pound gorilla. We were to compete with them for federal monies. Great experience. Lots of trips into Washington, D.C., where we were able to explain why the parameters that I was proposing were better than the paradigms that CRLA wanted to do. It also allowed me to look the director of California Rural Legal Assistance right in the eye and to say basically that he was full of hot air, not necessarily in those languages. Ultimately, Ventura was defunded, and the competition for the migrant money statewide came down to Inland Counties and CRLA. And CRLA won that battle. However, the farm worker contingent, the advisory council that has great influence within California Rural Legal Assistance, basically said, we want CRLA as the agency that will represent us, but we want Mr. Williams and his team. The upshot of that is that I was the founding officer, if you wish. I founded the Office of California Rural Legal Assistance in Coachella.
Wonderful.
I served there for a little over a year, and the politics at the time, being that I am an opinionated, tall, white dude that doesn't speak Spanish all that well, and that California Rural Legal Assistance was representing migrant farm workers, and their conceit was that they and only they could do the job. We ended up with a job action. Oh, I like that, an employment action. And here's what happened. California Rural Legal Assistance offered to fire me. They came down with four people to close up the office. They were met with a contingent of about 40 UFW, United Farm Worker, picket lines that refused to allow me to be fired. They denied CRLA access to the offices. One of the parties that was picketing was a woman by the name of Maria Serrano. Another that was there, I believe, was Leopoldo Trevino, a person I don't think that you have interviewed. Very active within the UFW. And it was sort of interesting. It was a dog bite, you know, man bites dog story. The upshot of it is that ultimately California Rural Legal Assistance's attorneys out of San Francisco, I might add, came down here in the midst of August, good time to negotiate in the heat, in an unair-conditioned tin building, to negotiate my contract. I did not appear. It was negotiated entirely by a group of three people, all of whom were UFW negotiators, Maria Serrano being one of them. Leopoldo Trevino, I believe, was part of that group. And then a very interesting person by the name of Jota Dolores Saldana. Good person. They negotiated a proper, and I might add, more than I probably would have negotiated, a dollar amount for my release. And I left, went into private practice in 1978. But those relationships stay with you. And I have known those three people now going on for about 40 years. The part of the reason that they went to bat for me is that during my stay in Coachella, there were a number of lawsuits that the group, myself and two other people that were working with us as community development folks, were able to find, and we pursued. One of them related to housing issues at what then was called the Fred Young Farm Labor Camp. Fred Young Farm Labor Camp belonged to the county. It was located within the city of Indio. And it was 253 units, something in that nature, about 1,000 people. And by definition, they were all farm workers, originally migrant farm workers, but farm workers. The county was something in terms, if you can believe this, $750,000 behind in payments to a state agency, the USDA, United States Department of Agriculture. The place had bad sewer. Anytime somebody flushed a toilet any more than three times or washed dishes twice, we'd end up with small little puddles of water that would come up with that froth on the top that would tell you that detergent was there. So Mrs. Serrano and Mr. Saldana, a community worker that worked with me by the name of Juanita Ramos, we formed a group, formed a corporation that was called the Indio Housing Development Corporation, Inc. And the whole goal of that project was to obtain control of 53 acres of now prime land, okay, not so prime at the time. It took us 4 years to do it, and I'm sure that Mrs. Serrano has talked about what went on with that, but we ultimately were successful. It was a good team. Mrs. Serrano and Mr. Saldana didn't always see eye to eye, because Mr. Saldana was old-time Mexican politician. He is a man that was short in stature, great in voice, who could stand on back of a bed of a pickup truck and address a multitude of people. He did not need a PA system. He was also old-line Mexican politician in the sense that he felt that women shouldn't be participating in politics.
How did that relationship go?
They were bound by a common goal, because Mrs. Serrano is a strong person, strong leadership, and all of her friends, if you wish, and her organizations are through family units, through women. Saldana, on the other hand, was just exactly the opposite. All of his contacts were through men. And it, as long as these two folks were addressing issues, we could do great things. It's only after we were incorporated and had control that their strong differences between the two of them began to create internal problems for the camp that 20 years later finally has surfaced with some events that have happened recently that I'm sure that Mrs. Serrano has talked to you about. But here's how it really worked. Mr. Saldana had a presence, and he understood much more English than he ever let on. He would go to a Board of Supervisors meeting, he would be introduced, and he could stand up and he would begin speaking in Spanish. And his Spanish was so clear, and he spoke Spanish very well, but most important for an Anglo listener, is he spoke it with authority and he spoke it slowly. so that you understood, if you saw the agenda, that he was here speaking for a group of people. There was no doubt in anyone's mind that here was a leader. Here was a leader that had common sense. And it's amazing how much of that can occur over a language barrier. It's body language. It's the way in which you express yourself. He had that ability. He was not a great organizer. I doubt that many of the men in the camp are great organizers. Now, Mrs. Serrano, different animal, totally different.
Tell me how.
Organizer, day one. And the two of them had commonalities in that both of them developed people that were loyal to them. Loyalty. But she came up through the ranks. She had great credibility. We have photographs of Mrs. Serrano as a young woman, a crowd of people, in about 71, 72, during the grape strike down here, which was a seminal event for the UFW, major grape strike. And it's a photograph that shows what they are photographs of evidence, photographs taken by the Riverside County Sheriff's Department that were to be destroyed a few years ago. But the fellow that had control or access to them saw that there's too much history there and did not destroy them.
But
a copy of those, the originals, are still around. And
where are they located?
Oh, I can't say that.
Okay.
But,
okay, I don't want to know.
But it may very well
maybe
be.
Maybe I don't want to know.
They may very well be available because they are historical photographs. But they will show you a line of people. If you have ever been in a vineyard, you'll know that vineyards are divided by roads that are fairly, you know, for access for trucks and all. Down the middle of the road are deputies of the Riverside County Sheriff's Department in full riot gear of the time in 71, clubs, the whole thing, and they're faced left, right, down the middle of the road. And on each side of the road, on the right-hand side of the road, lined up, same way, facing the center, were the, what is the name of that union? Ah, it'll come to my mind. But whatever, the Teamsters Union, there we go, they were trying to organize the fields on behalf of the of some growers. They were a sweetheart contract circumstance. These guys all looked like Green Bay middle backers, about 5 or 6 years out of their professional playing, a bit of a pot, if you wish, and big and mean. And they're staring right straight across the road. And on the other side of the road, you see all of these brown faces, old but mostly young, just lined up. And they are looking across. So it just creates a real sense of conflict that was there. And of course, the photograph is taken in the center looking straight down. And you can see clubs and sticks on each side that they'd been ordered to put down. But there in one of those is Maria Serrano. That's credibility. Let me return to the Indio Housing Development Corporation for a moment. The thing that is unique about the IHDC is not the fact that it is a corporation that has attempted to obtain a piece of property that they would manage for farm workers. What is unique is the following. It is, from the get-go, a farm worker-dominated corporation. That meant that the residents that lived within the camp had to be a majority. Now, the USDA has a series of rules and regulations that will formulate who they will lend money to. And as far as nonprofit housing, there's only three of them. Now, there may be four, but three that count. One is a regional or large community-based corporation, a 501c3. Community-based means essentially that if you have 25 different ethnic groups, you better have 25 different ethnic groups represented. And sexually, you know, sexual, that sounds bad, doesn't it? But you have to have gender balance and every other possible balance, including balance in terms of farm workers as against growers. A really bulky, hard to work with sort of a corporation. And they do the same thing except a smaller one, 25 members or so, that will be a regional. Then off to the corner, they have one that they refer to, I believe the language is, as a resident farm worker. Well, I guess it's a corporation of resident farm workers. That one is very straightforward. That will be a nonprofit in which 51% of the board will have to be a farm worker. Well, we found that little clause, took a close look at it, and we decided that's the one we would run with.
What year are we talking about? What time frame?
We're talking now. I think when I first started with this is when I was here the first time in 1973, for 1 year. That's when I met most of the players and became aware of the Fred Young Farm Labor Center and the problems that they had, because at that time I had advised them that about evictions. I was defending tenants. The county was in the process of evicting people. So I had represented a group of four people. I think Leopoldo Trevino may have been that person. I'm not sure about Maria, but perhaps. And they had committed a committee to defend residents that were being evicted. I think that was called the Comité de Justicia y Paz, or de Justicia, the Justice Committee, of which Maria and Saldana were, and Mrs. Marón, were all very, very active. I had advised them about a number of things. One is I had advised them how to defend on the basis of dilapidated housing. I left. That case was then picked up by Inland County Legal Services. I had nothing to do with this until I came back 3 years later. In the intervening 3 years, there had been some monies that had passed back and forth, but the bottom line is that the conditions at the camp were the same, because these were conditions that dealt with electricity, they dealt with sewer, they dealt with water. Everything that the county had done had been an attempt, just simply cosmetic changes. They never addressed the underlying health problems. And they also took money and used that money for some of their other projects. And in fact, that's why the camp was in the position that it was, a situation, because the county had been draining rentals from this to feed some other projects that they had had from time to time. And when I came back, as I said before, they were $600,000 or $700,000 behind on a $1.2 million loan. They hardly made any payments at all. So it was an embarrassment to the feds. So when we began, we were fortunate because, one, it was the right time. Second is that the right people happen to have been in the camp. Now, they've been spending 3 years working together, organizing, in terms of trying to prevent, trying to improve conditions. So when I came back, I had had a history with these folks, and at the same time, nothing had got better, and the feds had put some money back into it, into improvements that really hadn't been done. Perfect. The feds were unhappy, very embarrassed about the circumstance, and now we had an opportunity to put together a corporation from people that were right there within the camp. That's what we did. And it was very interesting. We had about 3 years worth of campaigning, and part of the campaign would be to try to show credibility to the Anglo world out there that these folks are for real. Well, one of them is the people aren't going to be around. They don't speak English. They are dumb. Real biases. Ignorance is one thing. Stupidity is something else. Ignorance you can cure. The upshot of it is that we had to create a sense of publicity and to keep it going, and we did. And the county participated quite well with that. For one thing is, every time a sewer lane would break, we would be down there with cameras, newspapers, and show some kid out there and the froth of water that was, just literally the foam on the top. And it got to the point where the county really was taking a beating about this. Then they tried to evict people, and we defended that. And I will tell you, we had a judge, and we had a bit of luck on that, because a number of people were being evicted, and some of the previous attorneys that had represented them in a very ill-organized rent strike. Now, these folks were about to be put out on their ear, and I was able to come in not representing parties but basically advising their attorneys. And we did make an appearance before a judge. We stretched this out until just before the Christmas season. So we went before a judge, made our argument, and I can recall vividly Judge Matheny, who sat back and does this little tent thing with his fingers, you know, and stares at the ceiling and talks to himself and says, "Well, gentlemen, this is what I can do. I could evict all of these tenants today. You'd be out in 15 days. And he took a big break. He says, "On the other hand," he says, "you know, I don't have to decide this case for another 60 days. Well, in rent strike issues, because of the cash flow, 60 days is a long time." And that's precisely what he did. So when he sat back and said, "Fine," he wasn't going to make a decision for 60 days, that was a great opening. And we were able then to bring the county pretty much to their, not to their knees, but at least to a room where they would communicate. We had a Republican female supervisor by the name of Corky Larson, who is still very active. She and her family are known because they sued the Cesar Chavez and others for an interview that Cesar had in some magazine where he was anything but kind to the Larson interest. She was a supervisor, and her thumb was on the button. She could say yay or nay. If she said yes, other supervisors would go along, and by saying yay or nay, it would be a matter of approving the transfer. So Mr. Saldana sat down and said in a meeting, "Maria and I will visit the Democratic assembly person over here, and you can go talk to the Republican. By whatever it is, I talk like and act like a Democrat, but I've always been a registered Republican," which got me into problems with CRLA years and years before. So I went down and we talked to our supervisor. We sold her on the basis that what this was is essentially privatization of a government program that clearly was not functioning correctly. To her credit, the only thing that she wanted, basically two things. She wanted to see a vote at the camp. As wanted to see what the people at the camp really wanted of the residents. And she wanted not stand up and raise your hand, but she wanted a secret ballot.
Why?
So that a person could go in and vote what they wanted to do without being forced to do anything by the organizers of the UFW.
Okay.
She wanted a secret vote. And we were more than happy to provide that to her, along with a request to raise money. 250 families, I think, must have been 100 of them, all kicked up, I think it was $100, something in terms of a war chest of $10,000 out of farm workers. That went a big difference, you know, it made a great credibility jump for this group. So ultimately, the transfer was made. USDA, however, did not really play square with us. Remember we talked about USDA's own rules and regulations talking about a farm worker majority. They refused for 4 years to make a transfer as long as there was a majority, right against their own rules and regulations. Their position was that farm workers would never, ever vote to raise their rents to maintain the place. They like to live in squalor, so that's what they would be doing. We got around that by creating a bit of a bastard board, and here's the way it worked out. USDA demanded that there be a minority of farm workers elected from the camp. We agreed to that. A majority of people, it would be off-site board members. We agreed to that. But then what we turned around and did is in-house. We just decided that since we were going to be nominating all of the, all but two of the off-site directors, that one would always be a farm worker, a retired farm worker. We'd have our cake and eat it too. That's what we did. And it had been managed by a fellow named Don Hyder, which is a story in and of itself. Part of what the USDA demanded and what our supervisor demanded is they wanted to see professional management. So we looked at professional managers, we advertised for professional property managers, and we had any number of people. One that really strikes me is a gentleman that came in out of Irvine, California, driving a BMW, big Series 7, alloy tires, nicely dressed down here, perfect to do business out of Orange County. I knew he was a Republican. I could spot him by the way he walked. He came in and he took a look, walked around, and what he was looking at was whether or not he could bring in investors on a 501c3, apparently is a way in which you can invest and make some money on your coupons. But he asked me as we were walking over, he says, "Do you think my car is safe?" And I said, "Nah, no problem whatsoever, sir." Now, if it were a Chevy, I'd have some problems. And the thing is he felt he didn't hear or feel the irony in that statement. And he literally breathes a sigh of relief and he says, "Thank God," he says, "nobody drives a Bimmer." Oh, okay, you know. But Don Hyder came in driving an old beat out, I won't say beat out, an old new Chevrolet station wagon, parked the car out in the middle of the camp where the windows rolled down, without a necktie, comfortable clothes, didn't even look back as he walked to our meeting place. And I think we all knew that this is a guy. We hired him, and he worked with us for better than a number of years. He also grew a management firm that probably worth a couple of million. He is now the his firm, the preeminent management for USDA projects throughout the state of California and Arizona. But we always knew him just as Don Hyder, good old friend. Now, can we go off the record? You know, story about Don Hyder. Don Hyder is the founder of Hyder and Company, which is one of the preeminent professional property managers for USDA subsidized housing in California and in Arizona. When he came to us about 1979, 1980, he had been good. He had a small regional business out of Arizona. He walked into our place, took a look at, drove in, I might say, in a Chevrolet, left the windows all rolled down, and just strolled into where we were working, never once looked back, and was very, very comfortable, both with the fact that he was working with Hispanics and the fact that this is a very large farm labor camp that had a reputation for having a number of tough gangs in it. El Campo, for years, was one of the, still is, one of the preeminent original gangsters, if you wish. The Hyder stayed with it as management for about 30 years, from 82, I think, up through right now, in fact, they're managing, so whatever that is, 82 to 2006. Don Hyder himself retired, and the new corporate Hyder and Company basically